I want to take a moment to recognize one of our sponsors, Producers Wealth. If you're interested to set up your infinite banking policy correctly and have access to a coach that will help you use your infinite banking strategy to grow your business and your investment portfolio, and having your capital work in more than one place simultaneously, and protect your capital from market downturns, taxes, predators, and creditors, you can watch a presentation of exactly how you can do this at yourownbankingsystem.com. That's yourownbankingsystem.com. Welcome to the Cashflow Ninja, the podcast sharing how to create and grow income streams and manage, multiply, and protect your wealth in the new economy. Are you tired of trading your time for money? Do you desire freedom today instead of retirement in 10, 20, or 30 years? I'm MC Lobsher, and this is the Cashflow Ninja. This is Cashflow Ninja. I'm MC Lobsher. Thank you so much for joining me for another episode of the Cashflow Ninja podcast and spending your most valuable resource, your time, with me. Everything Cashflow Ninja is at CashflowNinja.com, center of the Cashflow Ninja universe. And don't forget to sign up for our newsletter at CashflowNinja.com/subscribe. I've got a fantastic show for you. I'm joined today, returning guest. He was on a long time ago, so this is great.
Long time ago. Yeah, that's when I probably had hair at that time.
More hair than I have now. Hey, I'm struggling to hold on to mine, but Sterling White is joining me. Sterling, great to see you.
Yes, appreciate being on, and yeah, I really enjoy your energy. You're getting me fired up, and I'm already fired up.
Yeah, so for folks, if this is your first time hearing Sterling, you just go to CashflowNinja.com, type in his name, Sterling White. You'll find our previous episode. But so much has happened since that episode. It was a big transition. But before we get there, for folks that are not familiar with you and what you do, please share a little bit about your background and journey with us.
Yeah, so I'll give everyone the summary in about 30 seconds, 45 seconds, and clock me on that. But is that humble beginnings, single mother, fraternal twin brother, never knew if I was going to make it to the next day. 5 years old, almost lost my life to a stray bullet. And however, luckily ended up getting out that environment. And from that is got into real estate at a younger age, 19 years old as a construction laborer, read the book Rich Dad, Poor Dad, which many people are familiar with that, and saw that the rich and wealthy people didn't get there by actually being laborers. They were actually investors. And then started buying single families, bought my first deal, no money out of pocket, actually owed the bank money, just not being financially smart, since paid it back, and then no credit, and then ended up scaling to 150 single families. And then in 2017, started buying multifamily, got up to about 500 units.
So speak to me about the transition, because you sold all of your single family. You started in single family, sold that, went into multifamily. What spurred that change for you?
So with self-managing, and that's part of the reason why I don't have as much hair left due to all of that. And so took a step back. There's a lot of volume because those 150 single families, it just wasn't one or two transactions. It was about 115, 120. And then it's all the logistics. So these were about 120 or so, large amount were in Indianapolis and some in Dayton. So you've got all of this spread out, multiple roofs, a lot of some maintenance requests. And it's just the logistics of it in the intensive management. Took a step back and said, okay, what model was even more scalable? And the one that made the most sense was multifamily. And then once the decision was made, that's when the shift was done.
Gotcha. And then you went very, very quickly too on multifamily. You're just, you crushed it in single family. You went pretty quick from like zero to like 400 units, and you had over 500 at one stage, you said?
Yeah, correct. Just right around about 500 units, correct.
Okay. And now you're transitioning not to a different asset class, but you're positioning yourself as an investor. You know, and this is what I appreciate about you, is we keep talking to folks about how to invest differently at different parts of the market. But because, yep. I mean, I still see a lot of folks going on with the same ideas, the same insights, same strategies as it was like 2 or 3 years or even 4 years ago. And I'm like, we're in a completely different part of the market cycle now.
Yeah.
So talk to me about what you're doing and what you did with your portfolio of multifamily.
Yeah. I remember hearing people, would ask me, and these were people who were buying right after the crash happened. They said, yeah, I'm looking for apartments, and these were suburb or I would say C to B locations at a 10 and 12 cap. I'm like, good luck finding that. I mean, you could years ago, but that's just an example of someone who didn't change their criteria based upon the current market conditions. And gosh, I forgot what the original question was on the MC.
What you're doing with your multifamily right now.
Okay. Yeah, so have sold. So had a 46 unit, 50 unit, 280 units, and then 156 unit. So all that is left is 156 unit, which is actually now under contract to be sold. So yeah, have, and this is what I learned from Warren Buffett, is when those are greedy, it's the best time to be fearful.
Yeah, and tell me a little bit, what markets did you own that? Because you were very active in the Annapolis Dayton market. Is those the same markets that you stuck with for multifamily?
In Louisville, had bought a 80 unit out there. So I'd expanded there and was looking at Kansas City, as well as Columbus and Cincinnati, Ohio, but actually bought in Indianapolis, Dayton, and in Louisville, however you pronounce that.
You know, this is what I love about the United States. I see some of the spellings of places and then the pronunciations, and I'm like, oh, God bless this country. Like Arkansas, shouldn't that be Arkansas if we have Kansas, right?
Fair enough. Yes.
But nevertheless, I love it. So what did you see that made you like sit back, think, which is the hardest thing to do? That's why no one engages in it, according to Henry Ford. And what are some of the things that you saw that you're like, all right, it's time to take some chips off the table here and build a very, very good cash position for what you assuming, you know, we're going to see in the next couple of months and years?
I'd say is the unsolicited offers and then actually being able to sell at those prices is I'm not seeing how I would be able to compete with the people who are buying those properties, because they're buying the property for myself. And when I say myself, there is a team involved, but is I'm operating the property and I see the numbers. I'm like, how are they making that work with what they're buying it? So I would say that was the main indicator. Then also the sentiment is there's quite a bit of people that are talking about multifamily, and at some point in time, especially if you hear your Uber driver that's talking about it, that's really a good sign to get out.
Yeah. I want to take a moment to recognize one of our sponsors. One of the wealth strategy secrets of the ultra wealthy is that they make more income and grow their net worth every year and legally pay less in taxes. They also grow their capital when markets go up, down, and sideways. They grow their capital in economies that grow and boom, and in economies that are in recessions and even depressions. If you are a high income earner and trying to figure out how to legally reduce your taxes while receiving cash flow and growing your capital, Pantheon Investments have a great opportunity right now. By leveraging Pantheon Investments' holistic wealth strategy and its exclusive relationships, you can access an opportunity right now in oil and gas. This opportunity will help W-2 earners to legally reduce taxes, generate cash flow, and grow their capital. This exclusive opportunity will also position you to be on the right side of rising oil and gas prices. This is a limited offering available to accredited investors only. To learn more, go to cashflowninja.com/Pantheon. That's cashflowninja.com/Pantheon. Pantheon. So you've got what, rising interest rates? I mean, there was so much cheap money, right? And it had to go somewhere. Yeah. So if you look at the like Cantillon effect, you know, where the, you know, and for folks, if this is the first time you're hearing it, so Richard, he was French, so that's, I'm presuming that's how he pronounced his name, but Richard Cantillon was this philosopher, economist that noticed a couple of things. And he noticed that the people that were closest to the centers of influence, meaning the crown and the court around the crown, or advisors, the hand of the king or the queen, and all of the lords and so forth, when newly monies or currency units or, you know, created money at that stage was created,
Well, it went to the folks closest to the money first, right? The centers of influence. And what did they do with it? Well, they bought land, they bought real estate, maybe they renovated a castle or two, you know, that kind of stuff. All of a sudden, it went into hard assets. And then the money started making its way throughout the economy. And by the time it hit, like, you know, there wasn't really of a middle class, but let's just pretend for 1 second there was, or the working poor. All of these folks have already positioned themselves in hard assets. So now that the value has gone up immensely of that, and everything else, the cost of everything that people needed to survive, clothes, food, shelter, it all skyrocketed. So you saw that in the States, right? So a lot of this went into real estate, hard assets in the beginning. And it was a very big beneficiary from like 2020, 2021, you know, into 2022. Huge beneficiary of it before the interest rates started going up.
Wow. Yeah. And that's interesting that you mentioned philosophy and the economist side of things, because over the years, I've really been studying different philosophies that are out there, and especially the, let's say, the Marcus Aurelius's of the Stoicism, yeah. Let's say Taoism, and is a lot of what went on during those times is, yes, we've had technological advances, but the core, us as humans, and a lot of that still goes on to today. So that's great that you bring up that point, and we could even put on our tinfoil hat and go down rabbit holes when it comes to that. But yeah.
Yeah. No, absolutely. So the insiders got the dibs first and they positioned themselves. And now everybody else is like, why am I paying like double or triple for grocery bills? Like, how does that work? So you have massive asset inflation, unfortunately, massive price inflation. So the goods and services, everything else has gone up. But now you have interest rates, and it's almost like the genie's out of the bottle and the Fed's chasing, you know, inflation. So, I mean, how do you catch up with this? You eventually have to raise it essentially where inflation's at or over to stop it. So it's almost like not stoppable. But with these interest rate spikes, money's not so cheap anymore. And now it's all of a sudden, you know,
it's going to start to cause deflation is what I believe, too. And exactly. They could potentially overcorrect, because this is one thing. And I heard an economist or someone talk about this, is that the raising of the interest rates that we have experienced it's one of those lags that'll happen. It's not that, okay, we've had the recent months where it has, last month it went down just a tad bit, but not as much what everyone expected. But these rising rates actually affect us more in the future than as it is just a month or two. So that's one thing. And it could potentially, what we're doing now, really break something in the future, but we'll just have to see.
Yeah. It's almost like if you look at 2008, 2009, where a lot of folks said the wall broke in 2006, but it took like basically a year and a half for it to work through to get to the Lehman Brothers event, which everybody now look at and said, oh, that was the moment that the financial, like it started, right, with Lehman Brothers and Bear Stearns. But essentially, there was a lot of things that was already in motion that led up to that, a lot of different crises in a lot of different places. Watch The Big Short, great movie, by the way. But essentially, it walks you through that, because they saw it all breaking down and they couldn't believe how the markets were able to still hang on, you know, for like another year or so. It also almost wiped out the euros in that movie, or, you know, I guess you could kind of say the euros in the movie, the Michael Burry's, which is now pretty famous from that movie. Like, those guys were almost wiped out, and they were right. They just couldn't time it. So, you know, we don't have a crystal ball.
Timing is virtually impossible. That's why they always talk about dollar cost average, and whichever, let's say, it's stocks or crypto or whatever you're invested in, is to, instead of timing the bottom. Because, and this is, I'm glad you mentioned about history, because what I've learned is history doesn't exactly repeat itself, but it does rhyme. So you can just look at some of those sentiments in that. And this is, I was an investor and an operator at this time during the previous crash in the 2008-2009. But at that time, as everyone was saying, that nobody wanted to touch real estate because there was so much FUD that's going on and people thought it was going to keep going down. So that's what I believe, is that something such as that has happened. And that's when we know where no one wants to touch it. Not even me, likely, maybe even you.
It was ugly. It was very ugly. I went through that time and was Yeah, I wasn't an investor. It was ugly. And I always say to folks, as because a lot of people get involved in real estate and it's very, you know, the emotions are high and it's great when things go up and we've had a mess. What a run.
A super cycle. Yeah.
Yeah. What a run. Essentially from like 2011, 2012, right up till, you know, you would argue until they started raising the rates really sharply. What a run you had. So there's a lot of people that have never, ever seen the other side of this. And it was just as you, I mean, mentioned the fear, uncertainty, and doubt. I mean, people were losing.
The FUD, yep.
Oh my goodness. You saw people hurt. It was crazy. I mean, the bust was bad. It was, so you have to see both sides of it to really appreciate it and kind of like always be weary. And I think that's why you see a lot of folks that, especially like towards the end of the super cycle, underwrote stuff very conservatively. And you also saw folks basically just walk away from deals. I mean, there were folks that had, you know, over $1 million in earnest money in deals that that they just walked away from. Because they went through 2008 and 2009. It was brutal. But during those times, again, you know, if you understand the different cycles and you understand where we are and you understand how to position for it, you can time it. Like you said, it's almost impossible. None of us have a crystal ball, but you can kind of see, okay, we're now, the cycle is over. At some stage, the levers are going to break. And when they do, you want to have access to liquidity to capitalize on deals, right? I want to take a moment to recognize one of our sponsors. My friend Dave Zook says, you can be conventional or you can be wealthy. Pick one. At The Real Asset Investor, Dave and his team bring their investors high-yield investment opportunities across several asset classes for cash flow, tax impact, and equity growth. He and his team are one of the top five ATM operators in the country, and they have an investment opportunity available to accredited investors right now in the ATM space. To learn more about their ATM funds that produce tax-free cash flow, visit therealassetinvestor.com.
Yeah. And Ray Dalio, actually, he's someone that talks about this, and he's got the book Principles, which I mean, you can read that or just get the summary. But he also talks about cycles, the economic will, and I forget the value of the cycle. He has a YouTube video that exactly talks about this too. And he's someone who's very successful as a hedge fund manager, and he's been through multiple cycles, and so he can assess and say, all right, this is where it looks like we're at. Based upon these data points, he could be wrong, but I mean, it's good to hear those types of perspectives from someone who has experience.
Yeah. And you know, folks that have really brought it together, they bring together different market cycles too. Market cycle, economic cycle. You could argue too, yeah, we're at the end of an empire cycle, right? Those happen too. It's funny.
And even us as humans, we have our cycles.
Exactly.
Human nature.
Generational cycles, right?
We're going down the rabbit hole now, MC.
People don't think that way because a lot of folks don't appreciate history. But I grew up in South Africa, so you know you still have these coins at a lot of places. And you know, my grandparents had these coins of the VOC, the Verenigde Oost-Indiese Compagnie, which is like the Dutch East Indian Company. Like they had a world reserve currency, the Netherlands, Holland. Fancy that. You know, then you had reserve currencies and from other nations too. You know, most people will know, okay, we had the British pound sterling, then it's kind of transferred over to the US dollar. And, you know, Ray Dalio actually has a book about the new, what does he call it? The new economic order.
New changing order.
Yeah.
New changing world, order, new, I believe is worse.
Something like that. Yeah. And again, it speaks to the kind of the same thing where there's all these different cycles too. And then, of course, ever since I can remember, everybody's been talking about the demographic cycles. I mean, this was like, you know, in economics in college, I already heard about this. And we're not talking 20 something years ago where folks are like, well, there's this huge group of baby boomers, the largest generation ever, and they're going through different cycles. And they're now essentially exiting the workforce, selling businesses, And essentially going into retirement, right? So that has ramifications essentially too, because you have huge sellers of things. And if you look at the following generations, yeah, the millennials are bigger, but they don't necessarily have the buying power to essentially buy up all the assets that the boomers want to sell, right? So there's a disconnect in the marketplace, which brings opportunity.
Yeah, it's great we're going down this path in this conversation, because it comes down to awareness.
Yeah.
And just, yeah, you can look at the actual micros on, okay, prices are starting to come down, or interest rate, all that, but is understanding the actual macro. What is the even bigger picture behind all of this? And what you mentioned about the cycles and the different generations, possible human nature is, I mean, these are good conversations to have and allow you to be one step ahead of everyone if you have that bigger type of think. But that goes back to what you were saying with Henry Ford, is just most people just don't want to take the time to think.
Right. So talk to me a little bit about what you're doing right now. Have you created sort of like a buying list, you know, of a particular property, you know, that you're going to go after and target when the timing is right, essentially?
Yeah. So the criteria has shifted over the years. So it was more so 1970s type construction. So older built properties that did have deferred maintenance, where it could push up the rents about $100 to $150. And these would be in about B minus to B locations. So quite a bit of heavy lifting in those, but now shifting to more the B type of assets, where 1980s, 1970s construction, where there's less deferred maintenance. In between, I would say the unit count of 75 to 150, but out here in Houston will go as low as about 40 units. So that'll be the bread and butter.
That's another thing. You moved, right? So you moved from Indianapolis to Houston. So what markets, let's talk about that too, because you went very specific about the property. What markets are you going to be looking for deals when you feel the timing is right?
So primarily, it'll be here in Houston, Texas. I always like saying Texas like that, but is that, and then still in the back, well, not backyard anymore, but Indianapolis, Indiana, Louisville, Kentucky, really like that market, as well as Cincinnati and Columbus, Ohio, and Kansas City, Missouri. But primarily Indianapolis, Louisville, Houston, and then those other markets will be secondary.
Gotcha. And what prompted the move from Indianapolis to Texas? Texas, Houston.
Yes, Texas. Yeah, I should put my cowboy hat on, which I don't have a cowboy hat, but is so the move was, I just wanted to get out of my comfort zone. So I had success in Indianapolis there all my life. And this was right around when the pandemic had happened in the end of 2020. And I was just in this mental rut. And there was just something that said to me that, why not move? And then the fear started selling it. You've been here all your life. No, this is the unknown. And when I've had my biggest breakthroughs in life is when I've leaned into the actual fear. So I was looking at Austin. I was looking at Tampa and then Houston, and had never even been to Houston. And for some reason, this ended up just calling me here. First month. I would say there's likely was some depression involved with that, because I didn't realize how big of a move that was. But ever since then, best move I've ever made decision.
By the way, fun fact, one of the best rodeos in the country is in Houston, Texas. I've been to that one at the football stadium. Man, okay. What an experience.
This isn't one of those. What is that called where they release the bull and then you're able to run? They don't do that in the States here, do they?
No. That's like the running of the bulls in Pamplona. In Spain.
Okay, definitely
people
not
are
a rodeo.
Running through the street and the bulls are chasing them.
Would you do that?
I mean, 20 years ago, yes, but not right now. I mean,
you know. Fair enough. He's like, that's such a random question, but yes.
Yeah. You know, when you get older, you lose a couple of steps of speed, right?
So yeah, you definitely don't want to lose a couple steps in that situation.
Right. But then again, you just have to be, you don't have to be the fastest guy of everybody that's running. Just not the slowest guy. Because that's
gotcha.
So Houston, Texas, different market. That's great. So you're now just making contacts in all those markets, looking at different properties. How are you spending your time, you know, building this shopping list essentially?
So yeah, we pull leads from various databases, whether that's Reonomy or CoStar, and then yeah, hit the list with calls, because have taken the direct to own approach with that. But right now, is it haven't been on full acquisitions mode, because the ROI just hasn't been there, because all the deals that I've acquired on the multifamily side have been direct to the owner. And there's a lot of work that goes into that, and just haven't seen the ROI there over the most recent years. So I've slowed down and just been nurturing those relationships that I've had formerly.
I want to recognize one of our sponsors, Penumbra Solutions. Live settlement investments have allowed financial and banking institutions to not only buy their equity contractually, but also diversify their capital from any economic, market, and geopolitical risk. It's been part of the $1 billion blueprint, followed by institutional investors. And if you're an accredited investor, you can also now participate in this vehicle with enormous growth potential. You can watch an informational webinar presented by one of the premier organizations providing life settlement investments, Penumbra Solutions, at cashflowninja.com/life settlements. That's cashflowninja.com/life settlements.
Are those markets still hot, or are they kind of cooling down a little bit too with interest rates, economic slowdown? Because there's so many people that move to Texas, right? Texas, Florida, Arizona, all the Sunbelt states from different parts of the United States. So tell me what's going on there.
Multifamily, I'd say no. Okay. And in Indianapolis, I've actually seen what we're getting on the 156 unit. I cannot see how someone is buying that. I don't want to disclose the actual price, but it is a very low cap for this particular property, and receiving $1 million more than what was than our 5-year projections, and we're 2 years into the project. So thus far, haven't seen the slowdown, because yes, the interest rates are going up, but inflation is going up too. And with inflation going up, rents go up along with it. So prices still have been able to sustain, but how long that'll be able to go, we'll have to assess. And some markets are a little different than others and have been affected, but not the ones I've been in right now.
Gotcha. Yeah, it's kind of an interesting time right now that we're recording this, because you're like, there's so many things that tell you that I could feel a shift, but then you see a lot of things that it's not happening yet.
It's weird. Yeah. I mean, is that the same for you, or what are you seeing in the market?
Yeah, that's kind of, I mean, I'm in a couple of different networks in different markets. So I see some people are walking away from really big deals, and it doesn't make sense anymore because of the financing on it too. These are folks, operators that have been in the business quite a while, like 20 plus years. So they're very conservative. They've invested at top of market cycle, so they know how to underwrite things. Then they're going to walk away from stuff if it doesn't make sense. And then in other areas, I mean, in other examples, there are still folks moving on stuff. But like you said, these might be newer folks that this is their first time. So they're trying to get that. They haven't seen the ugly of the other side, because it's ugly. It gets very ugly.
Yeah. But long term, it goes up and to the right. But if you need to get out in the next 1.5, two and a half years, that's where you could get in trouble.
Gotcha. Switching gears here. So you're a great networker. You've had fine access to a lot of like big players. Grant Cardone being one of them. He's been on this show as well. What are some strategies? Because we might have some younger folks listening to this. We might have some folks with their own businesses, some folks with their own syndication businesses, and they're trying to get a hold of people or get access to people. What are some of your strategies that you've leveraged?
Well, one, you got to build yourself up to where there is some either value exchange, or because that if you're someone who's just starting out and you go up to Grant, maybe you could get a shot. But the likelihood. So that's one thing, is that when I approached him, is my podcast already had some traction going. And then also I was already in his ecosystem, so paid quite a bit of money within that. Within the programs, the boot camps and all that. And he was already familiar with my face, because I just kept popping up there and asking questions and all that. So I would say is a way to start to branch yourself out there is one, build yourself up to be someone who that person would want to have a relationship with. So that's first and foremost. And then just putting yourself out there, which is the common thing that people do talk about.
There's no shortcuts. You know, and yeah. I've done consulting for a lot of folks that have started their own shows and, you know, wanted to have a conversation. I'm always happy to share, you know, like strategies and that kind of stuff. And I always say that to folks, there's no shortcuts. You literally have to build up this platform to a point that you're going to get a certain individual or company that want to partner with your platform and you. There's just no, and I mean, great business lesson too. If your business are looking to collaborate with another business, yeah, you're going to have to grow into that business that other business would want to collaborate with, right?
Exactly. You could get someone who sees something in you and they'll say, okay, well, we can get, but do you want to rely? And that's just not something sustainable to do.
Yes. And another thing that I also share is that even if you collaborate with the right individual or business, they're not going to take your platform or your business to the next level. That's another thing. People think,
that's right. Yep.
I connect to this person and now all of a sudden I'm collaborating with this individual on something, whether it's Robert Kiyosaki on a podcast or Grant Cardone, all those folks, Kevin Harrington, or collaborate with other businesses. No. You're still going to have to do it yourself. You're still going to have to grow the business. There's absolutely no shortcuts.
Yeah. And that's a great point, because there was two YouTubers. One was just starting their channel. They may have had maybe a few subscribers or maybe a few hundred. And then the person who gave them a shout out had a couple million subscribers. They gave them the shout out. They had this huge influx and then it just went down. And because they didn't have something that was built to actually keep those people around, and they were actually more so worse off because mentally they had that high spike and wasn't able to actually capitalize on it. So yeah, this goes back to what you're saying. Commonly, I get questions from newbie and investors. They are looking for that shortcut. And I can tell by the questions that they ask, I'm like, there are one is patience and there are no shortcuts. Or even if there are, is you wouldn't want to take that shortcut because it's not going to be good long term.
No. There's no short. And I always joke, there's no get rich quick. Okay. If there is, please, I've yet to see that. You know, I've been searching for it for 20 plus years. There's none of that. There's this really, really hard work and building something from the ground up that eventually is valuable for other folks that they want to be a part of and want to support. And you have to consistently put out quality products and services, you know, and I look at every single podcast that I do as essentially a product. And yes, folks listen to it for free on platforms and that kind of stuff. But I still see it as a product, as something that delivers value to the listener and has them, you know, keep coming back essentially.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. One of the things that I've observed from wealthy and successful folks, they're always studying, they're always learning. What are you up to these days? What are you studying and learning as you're, you know, preparing your shopping list and working your new market to eventually, pounce on some deals that when they become available?
I like the pounce because there's this cat that's just outside that keeps meowing. It's very loud. But so I'd say it's studying philosophy in a lot of history. And I'm glad you made those comments earlier on that, because we're on the same page with just the understanding that will allow you to understand what's going on now or some. I mean, maybe not exactly, but you'll be able to take some of those lessons from that. So studying a lot of philosophy, also taking on macroeconomics. So understanding further than that, not so much micro, but sticking to the high level. And then thirdly is learning a new language. So Spanish is one of the languages I could speak it, but I'm still working on the listening part right now.
Gotcha. Awesome. That's good stuff. And you're still contributing to Bigger Pockets too, which has been a great platform. Maybe you can comment on that and what's that done for you too. Because essentially, here's another thing. somebody's listening to this. I don't have a podcast. I don't have a platform. There's some already a platform that you can plug in.
Exactly. And it's free to use. And
build an audience. Yeah, it's free.
Yeah. We don't get a kickback for anybody signing up for that. Just disclaimer on that.
Yeah.
But that's exactly how I really was able to build the backbone of my brand is going on there and contributing in the forums. And then there's free blogs that I was able to do. And then I was able to start blogging on the main blog. And all of that was a form of content marketing. And this is one really good book, which is Jab, Jab, Right Hook by Gary Vaynerchuk, which talks about the foundation of content marketing is pushing out value to others. And your right hook is, hey, I've got this syndication that you can invest in, which is the right hook. But a lot of times is by you giving so much value to someone, you don't even have to go for the right hook.
Yeah, absolutely. And then that's one way of doing it. Any other things that you think that my audience would benefit from knowing, things that you're seeing, things that you're aware of, and things that you're thinking about?
I would say patience. I get this so often that, especially nowadays where you could say the microwave age with social media, where everyone believes everything's overnight. Now, someone sees someone just post the deal and they post the deal and they believe, that person got that deal. How come I haven't got my deal just yet? And it's been 60 days and I'm looking to acquire 50 units. So is this just, I would say, patience and really having the expectation that real estate, from my personal experience, is a long-term play. And it's, as you mentioned, instead of get rich quick, it's a get rich slow, get rich and wealthy slow.
Yep. Yep. Absolutely, my friend. Where can folks follow you? Where can they stay in touch and learn of all the many things that you're involved with?
Yeah, I'd say you can check me out on sterlingwhiteofficial.com. One more time there, sterlingwhiteofficial.com. Then also I'm on YouTube as well. Just go to the search bar, type in Sterling White, look for a bald, handsome guy, and I'll come right up.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for coming on the show and sharing your journey and just, again, providing so much value for my listeners and my viewers.
Hey, appreciate the opportunity. MC, you were dropping some bombs through there. I actually got quite a bit of value from this content, learning from your experiences. So thanks so much for having me on.
And thank you to you, the listeners and the viewers, for spending your most valuable resource, your time, once again with me on the show. Everything Cashflow Ninja is at cashflowninja.com. And please subscribe to our newsletter at cashflowninja.com/subscribe. Until next time, live infinitely. This presentation is for educational and informational purposes only. The information being presented and considered does not consider your particular financial objectives or situation, and it does not make personalized recommendations. This material is not intended to replace the advice of a qualified tax and legal advisor or other qualified professionals, and you should not use the information in place of a customized consultation with a licensed professional regarding your specific personal financial objectives, situation and needs. We believe the information provided is reliable, but we do not guarantee its accuracy, timeliness, or completeness.